This is React Podcast. I'm Chantastic. This week, we sit down with Dominic Nguyen and talk about visual regression testing for design systems with Chromatic, the important differences between snapshot testing and visual testing, why components were the missing piece, and how Chromatic can give your team confidence. First, a quick word from today's sponsor, Infinite Red. If you're building a React or React Native app and you're feeling stuck, check out Infinite Red. They'll dive into your React or React Native project with a ton of industry knowledge and expertise and help you get out from behind whatever's blocking you. They have a unique approach where they teach you as you build together. They've taught tens of thousands of developers through open source and their annual React Native conference, Chain React. React Podcast listeners get two free tickets to Chain React in 2021 for referring or starting a new project. Visit reactpodcast.infinite.red and build a beautiful, functional app today. Dominic, welcome to React Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Michael. How's it going?
It's going good. It's going good. I am really excited to have you on the show because a lot of times with React Podcast, it's like there's a lot of libraries that maybe I haven't had a chance to use, and we talk about like the hype around that thing. But you have made a product that I am in love with, and I'm just excited to have you on the show and we get to talk about it. So tell me a little bit about Chromatic and kind of your role there and what you're doing.
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity, and listening to the backlog of episodes, you've really had just the who's who of the React land on this podcast. So I'm just like, you know, honored to be in that company. Sometimes I feel like I don't belong here, but...
Oh, no, you've earned it. You've earned it.
Yeah, and so a little bit about me. I'm the co-founder of Chromatic, or of Chroma, the company behind Chromatic. You can find that at chromatic.com. Chromatic is a visual testing tool for UI components and libraries, and it integrates deeply with Storybook. Storybook is a product that we maintain at Chroma, and a lot of your listeners might have heard about it, but what Storybook is, it's a component explorer that helps you develop UI components in isolation. And there's a bunch of attendant benefits that you get from developing components in isolation, such as visual testing and so on.
Nice. Now, I'm kind of curious that you mentioned these things and they're very deeply paired, but I want to kind of figure out right from the beginning, like exactly where the boundaries of those relationships are. Because I think while we haven't actually covered it on this podcast, I feel like Storybook is very popular in the React community and like kind of similar communities, but maybe less so Chromatic. And so I'm kind of curious what the relationship of those two things are. Does Chromatic depend specifically on Storybook? You mentioned that your same team is working through those things together. Tell me a little bit about that.
Right. Yeah. So that's a good question. And a lot of people are wondering about this too. So Storybook is a component development environment. It helps you build components in isolation, and you use that on your local machine, right? Developers just build. They spend a lot of time kind of like building these components in isolation, saving those states as stories. Yep. It's really useful for getting to like the wiggly kind of edge cases of components, right? That loading state, that error state, the primary, secondary, all of these states, right? And so it's super useful for like mocking all of those states out, saving them as stories so that you can review them later, sharing those stories with other people so you can actually get feedback on some of that work.
Yep.
And then this is all done at the individual developer level. Mm-hmm. Chromatic is a tool that integrates with Storybook. So it's made for Storybook that turns your existing stories into visual tests, right? And what visual tests are the problem they solve is you want to test the appearance and layout for regressions over time. If you've ever been in a situation where you're building an app and you make one tweak and then over here, and that breaks something over there, and this is especially common in and component libraries and with like the UI and UI architecture that we've all adopted, yep. right? With React.
Yeah, yeah.
You essentially have a component tree that is like a deeply nested component tree, right? To build a page. And then
yep.
there's a bunch of interdependencies between these different components, right? So your button lives on like 1500 pages, right? If you're if you're building like a static site, your button lives everywhere.
Yeah.
And you mess with a button and that could change every single page, right? Or God forbid you mess with like a global CSS and all of a sudden you're just, like there are regressions everywhere, right? There are bugs everywhere. And the last thing you actually want is like for your CEO to like send you a screenshot at 9 p.m. at night of like the website and the website and on their phone in like some weird orientation that you never thought about. It's just a bad look for you, right?
Yeah,
and so Chromatic is like kind of built to solve that problem where we're turning your existing stories into visual tests. We're testing them every time you push code. So we're effectively testing your entire component library every time you push code, and then notifying you in your CI and GitHub PR or GitLab or Bitbucket, what have you, PR workflow as a CI check. And what that does is that it of course like saves you a bunch of time from having to manually QA this, right?
Sure.
Our storybook has like 1300 stories and and like I can't QA everything. And it's just not possible.
Yeah.
And you probably can't I QA it. I don't want to QA it. it's the worst.
That's the realness. It's the right worst. There. Yeah. Well, I think this is interesting, like at the There has been such a separation, I think, for a really long time of like design and development.
Yeah.
And component models like React have put all of that back together, right? Like now design and development really is happening, you know, on the front end at least, in the same space.
Right.
And we have this shared space. And a lot of times, you know, you have, you know, developers working on stuff and they might, you know, change something that impacts like directly impacts design now.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned, with these cascading changes, you have no idea kind of like where that is or where that could be like affecting other parts of the application. And so it sounds like with Storybook, we're kind of like isolating these to like stories. Can you tell me a little bit more about like, I know that I have my own mental model for like what a story is, but it seems like kind of like an isolated, at least in the Chromatic Storybook world, like an isolated check,
yeah,
right, of like, hey, we use these things together or we use this thing in isolation with these specific combinations of props and we want to make sure that like this little piece is together, or like when it's composed with these five other bigger things that this is how it looks. Is that like a pretty safe estimation of like what a story is?
Yeah, and a story is your component and with a combination of props that yields like a UI state, like a certain UI appearance, right? And so a button might have like primary, secondary, tertiary, like error, disabled, all of that stuff. And those in React and pretty much every single view layer that has the component construct, which is every view layer, the inputs, which are the props, are passed through the component and they yield some permutation of that UI. And so the story just captures like the permutation of UI, which permutation of UI it is. And so a component can have multiple stories. And likewise, you brought up a good, kind of like an advanced topic. Most people think about Storybook as just a thing for like design systems or like, you know, small component libraries, really atomic component libraries. When in fact, Storybook is used to build like the full-on apps. So you build the atomic components, then you assemble those atomic components into kind of compound components with a bit more logic, mm-hmm. right? So you take your button, you add that to your credit card, you know, form that includes a button, but it also includes like atomic components like inputs and like date pickers and all and what have you. And then you can render that in Storybook too, in isolation, without having to deal with like your backend APIs or anything else in your application. And then you can then take that and then assemble that into a page, purely presentational page. And the benefit of doing that is I chatted with Curtis Kempel, who was at MLB a couple years ago, actually. Uh-huh. And he really summed it up nicely. So I'm just going to, you know, parrot his words as my own. He was saying,
that's all I do on the show anyway. So
he was saying something about like, with Storybook, you can graduate the complexity that you face at every, when you're doing UI development, over time, as you build, right? So you can start with like low complexity buttons, to more higher complexity, like forms, to higher complexity pages, or like, workflows like widgets, and then to even higher complexity, kind of like screens and views. And that was something that, you know, has stuck with me this entire time. It's Storybook helps you at every single stage of UI development.
Yeah, I love that. And it kind of goes back to that Brad Frost kind of like atomic design.
Yeah.
And he talks about like, you know, atoms, and I can never remember the terms are so sciencey, they escape my brain, but it's like, you know, atoms and
molecules,
molecules.
Organisms. I forgot the last one though. Oh, is it pages? I think it's pages.
Yeah, it kind of like jumps the shark somewhere towards the end of there. You get like layouts and pages.
Yeah, you bring up Brad Frost, but he wrote a blog post a couple months ago that really describes how he uses Storybook. And he uses Storybook in the same way that I just described. He's like, hey, I'm building these atomic components, but I'm also building composite components, and then, or using his terminology, like the molecules, the organisms, and the pages. Yep. As well. So he's actually on the Storybook website as like, you know, a testimonial for like someone cool that uses Storybook and is innovating in that way.
Well, that must be really satisfying, because I know that for a really long time they've maintained their own tool for that.
Yeah.
Pattern Lab.
Yeah. Yeah. He really pioneered all of this, and I don't quite know a ton about Pattern Lab. But it seems really awesome, and yeah, for a long time they were maintaining it. But I guess he uses Storybook now. He described it in one of his blog posts, like, this is what we use for React development.
Awesome. So I know that there's so many testing practices and patterns for React, and you know, everything for that matter. Testing is like a hot topic in anything, and I'm really curious. You know, so React, you know, a lot of times is paired with Jest, and Jest has a lot of this snapshot testing built in, which kind of like takes a shallow look at like what the output is that would be sent to the DOM. And I'm curious, like, how does it differ from like snapshot testing, or how does visual regression testing differ from snapshot testing?
So with snapshot testing, and the funny thing is, like, we used to do snapshot testing, and snapshot testing is actually a viable technique in a lot of cases, right? It's a matter of like what snapshot tests test, right? They're testing the actual like rendered markup through, in Jest's case, like JS DOM, I believe. So they're testing the rendered markup, right? But people aren't looking at the rendered markup. They're looking at the rendered markup, the DOM, right? They're not looking at the DOM.
Yeah.
They're looking at the actual pixels as they are rendered through the browser, through like real life browsers, right? And so,
yeah, like if people read HTML,
right,
then snapshot testing is great,
right? And snapshot testing, when you're building a kind of a component library or an app, is you end up with a lot of false positives, because say for instance, like some pathological use cases are like you change a line of CSS, right? That fails your snapshot test like immediately, because the rendered output is a little bit different now. Mm-hmm. But sometimes when you change a line of CSS, like nothing changes. Right, you remove display block and on a div element, and it's nothing has changed. It's already display block. It can't get more display blocky than that. And what's more, like, it doesn't necessarily test for the kind of assets as they are loaded, right? So for instance, like images, and it'll test like the fact that it's requesting an image, but it doesn't test that the image is actually like rendered on screen. So what visual regression testing, the benefit there is that you actually test what people see and what they experience and what they look at, versus what is rendered to the DOM that then has to be filtered through like the browser kind of rendering engine that then gets shown to the user. We're just testing the right, I think with visual testing, we're testing the right output.
Yeah, that's really interesting because I have felt that pain before, right? Where you get those false positives and you're writing these tests and it feels like every time, and we've talked about this on the show even, like that numbness that you get to the false positives in visual regression testing, right? Because you change something and then you're like, oh, well, I know this is going to break the test, even though it's like inconsequential that it breaks the test.
Exactly. And then you're just approving all, right? Like I found myself just like, where's this approve all button? Like I'm scroll all the way through my terminal and just like, okay, I don't care. Like I'm going to approve it. Because like it's really noisy. I guess that's what it comes down to. It's like super noisy and it's super noisy because you're not testing the right output or you're not testing the output that users care about. Mm-hmm. You're testing like a step on the way to that output.
Well, this is really interesting because I have long, as we have moved into kind of React components as like everything, right?
Yeah.
And as you know, designers and developers are kind of both working in the same space, which has historically been very frustrating for people. I have kind of long said like designers shouldn't have to worry about like failing tests.
Yes.
Right. Like you change some like, you know, style or whatever. Like it's really shitty to be like, oh, well now you have like, you know, CI's like breaking and like because there's some like test or whatever, because you change something, you know, that's visual. And like I do think that those things should be under test, but like now you have to open up some kind of like opaque, you know, JavaScript testing file to like do something about it. Like it's just not the right, like you did it wrong.
Don't get me started. Get me started. No, I started off as a designer, and that's kind of what I most identify with, and because that's where I'm coming from. I really do care about the actual end result of like development, because that's what people see. That's my work, right? My work feel like in collaboration with a bunch of engineers and product managers and all that, but it's still like it's something that I want to be proud of.
Yeah,
and so. And with a lot of kind of, I guess, like previous ways of doing stuff, like the developer experience or like the experience of like creating these tests isn't that great. And nor is the experience of like reviewing the tests as a designer, nor is the experience of like just like maintaining the test suite, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know if this is exactly what you're talking about, but it's like that whole experience is a barrier to actually like testing the UI. And and when you test the UI, like the UI is actually what people care about, right? So all the barriers that people put, or that technological processual like barriers that you put in front of like, you know, testing the end result that people like use and your customers use and feel, is just like makes the experience worse. And so I think that's what we're trying to do with Chromatic, and I think we've done is we kind of make that whole process a natural and kind of invisible part of your development process. So writing tests, like when you're in Storybook, you're not thinking about, hey, I need to write a test. You're thinking about, how do I develop this? But we can say, as Chromatic, we can use those stories as tests. And as you continue building your component library in Storybook, and as you continue kind of innovating in product or in your application land with Storybook, so too do you get a bunch of tests effectively for free without even thinking about it. And that's all integrated into your development process in a kind of seamless and invisible way.
Yeah, I love this notion of like just having it be using the code as a test.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, so you, if you've designed this, you know, this button or this, you know, input or this alert or whatever, or even a bigger component, like a card that's used on travel sites to select a flight or something like that, like something, you know, really like a really big interactive one, you know how like implementing it works. Like everyone on the team knows how to implement it. And like, once you've implemented it enough to put it on a page, like, well, now you have something that's actually like testable at the right level. So tell me about what Chromatic does with that. Like, what are all the things that like Chromatic provides as a service?
Yep.
Now that you have these stories, what's Chromatic doing that kind of improves that process for designers?
Okay. Yeah. So to get into it, let's talk about what you were doing before to like implement visual regression testing. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of the classic example. The first thing that you would probably do is there are a bunch of open source libraries, things like Backstop and that exist out there. And so they're responsible for taking the snapshots in the first place, right? They take the snapshot, you take snapshots, and then you have to, then from there you compare them somehow, right? So there's a diffing process. And then from there, you have to integrate it into your CI process or your CI pipeline, right?
Yep.
And all this typically would happen on your local development machine, right? So every developer would be responsible for running this test suite on their local development machine. And the challenge with local development machines are kind of like twofold. The first is like, they're slow. it's going to take ages to run that test, right? Like, you have 1,300 stories like us, and some of our customers have thousands and thousands of stories. It just takes infinite time. Like, you don't yeah. have much that much time in the day to run that test suite as much as you push code, right? You run 10 commits. Like, if you push 10 commits, you don't want to wait 10 minutes for the test suite to run on your machine. The second thing is that every local development machine is different, right? If you even between of course between like Mac and Windows and Linux, but also between versions of Mac and Windows and Linux, yeah. and also versions of Chrome and versions of Firefox and versions of IE11. Or, I mean, I guess there's only one version of IE11. Let's be real. So
though the differences between the Metro version and the like desktop version, there are some.
Exactly. And so so okay, back to the things that you would end up doing is like you would have all these, you'd wait a long time for these snapshots yep. to take or to get captured on your local environment. You'd put them into like a directory somewhere, and then you'd generate another directory that you'd compare them with, right?
Yeah.
And all of this is living probably in your repository at this point, right? Like,
yeah.
I think there's a GitHub limit on how big these repositories can get, but like, I've seen some pretty weighty ones.
Yeah, because you have to store the previous.
Exactly.
Version. Like, even if you throw away the temporary ones, you still have to keep something as reference.
That's right. And so, in the past, people were doing this all like on their local machine. It took a bunch of time. It just kind of bloated their repository, and frankly, the process sucked, right? There's no way to get around it. And the tooling, it like individually, it was good, right? So like we work in open source. We love the open source like ethos. We love the open source tooling. Open source projects are usually scoped for like a tiny, tiny job, right? Doing one job really well,
yeah.
right? But I just described like three or four jobs just now, right?
Yeah.
And so like you would have to connect all of those like different types of libraries and build that kind of process all yourself for your project, right? And for each project, in fact, that you end up doing.
Yes.
Now, we didn't want to do that. we thought that was like not the best use of our time and not the best use of like developers' time, because why would someone kind of do this all in their own machine, and it would take a really long time. It would cost like a bunch of maintenance effort, your own time, and of course the repo bloat. So Chromatic does this all in the cloud, right? We solve a couple problems. One, we solve like the speed problem, right? So we have kind of a parallelized infrastructure where we run all these tests kind of in parallel, and we just scale it to offer you the most concurrency so that you get your tests in the least possible time. Because who wants to wait for CI? Not me. The second thing we do is we have like standardized and uniform browsers, right? Because as I was saying earlier, there's certain problems with running stuff on your local machine. Every machine is different.
Yeah.
And that means you're getting a bunch of false positives in your tests if those visual tests aren't run on the same kind of like same uniform browsers, right? So we offer that too, and we scale that out for you. We also kind of give you the storage and kind of history of like your baseline history effectively, and we use that baseline history to compare any incoming commits to check for regressions, and we do this outside of your repository, so it's not causing a bunch of repo bloat for you. And then we offer CI integrations, so that you just automatically get the PR badge in GitHub, or in CircleCI or what have you. Like, we integrate with a bunch of different services, and then we offer a website for anyone on your team to go in and review kind of these any changes that might happen, or any changes that are found in the diffing process, to check if they are either bugs or, you know, improvements, because oftentimes they are improvements as well. So this whole service is packaged up into one kind of clean integration that you have to do as like a Storybook user. And so you're only maintaining that one integration point and getting a whole stack, a whole testing stack automatically.
There's so much there to love, and I want to touch on a couple of them, like so the social part of it, the like browsers, and then also the integrations. And like, I want to start with the social team dynamic thing, because that I don't think it can be overstated how much all of those surrounding things will stall the effort. Like, I wanted to get visual regression testing in my applications for years.
Yeah.
But there was always something that was it was one of those things that made it really impossible, right? Like, well, where do we store the diffs, right? Yeah. Like, well, these tests take forever to run. So like, how do we not run some of these? But then like, if you don't run some of them half the time, like, do you remember to run them when you need to run them?
Yeah.
Like, there's so many team dynamics that make this difficult. And I think that if nothing else, like having solved that, where you don't have to figure out where to put the diffs, where you have to like where these things are running, how to like kind of consequentially decide when the tests are run, is like such an important thing for anyone who wants to actually solve this and not just spend a month researching it to decide that it's not going to work for your team.
Yeah. Yeah. And you called it out like really well. Like, all of these things individually are huge barriers, right? They're deal breakers for getting visual regression testing set up in your organization. If it's too slow, right, no one wants to wait. No DevOps person is willing to add a 10-minute process to their CI pipeline that might already be like 20 minutes. Like, who knows? Like, so no one's willing to like wait on these tests for a really long time. No one's willing to add a huge directory of like PNGs or multiple directories of PNGs to the repo, because like, that doesn't make sense. Why would they like intermingle test results with the actual code itself? That doesn't feel, that's like icky to me.
Totally.
And then no one wants to deal with false positives, because that just wastes people's time, or false negatives even.
Yeah.
And both false positives and false negatives are deal breakers, right? Because if you can't trust your tests, or you can't trust that your tests are testing the right thing, then you just lose confidence in the whole testing infrastructure, the whole testing process anyways. And then of course, and then once we solve that infrastructural layer of like, get past those barriers, the next stage is, how does this work with the team? How does my team, what's the developer experience, the actual developer experience of like approving stuff and like denying stuff and requesting feedback, sending like links around that your like designer can come in and review, or your PM can come in and review, or God forbid your CEO comes in and like swoops in and like press that accept button.
It happens.
Yeah.
I need this now. Approved.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think that is something that I really love about the service. And I want to like I want to take a moment to just disclose that this is not like, I'm a big fan.
Yeah.
So like if anyone's kind of looking for an alternate perspective, you're probably gonna have to go somewhere else. This is just me being excited about what you're doing.
And this is not a paid, this is not paid at all. Like we're just chatting about the service.
Nope.
Yeah.
My team pays for Chromatic. So we're, yeah, just an honest thing. We're just gonna get that disclosure out of the way so nobody
sure.
thinks I'm a shill for that. But like, I think that you were leading into the service side of this, and this is something that's so important, is having an additional way to, I think you talk about this as visual reviews.
Yeah.
And having a way, instead of just kind of like, you know, you get this, you know, badge that's like, you know, or like a CI integration that says like, oh, you know, Circle CI failed.
Yeah.
Like, whatever, go in here and like look at the 10,000 lines of generated like ASCII characters for why like this visual thing failed. And the cool thing that you add with your service is that now you have this visual review process. People can now go out, look at the things that visually changed, and have a discussion kind of on the Chromatic platform. Talk a little bit about that and what you're seeing, like how you're seeing that help teams.
For sure. One thing that we realized early on is like you have to build a professional production UI with a team. Yeah, you can build something on your own, but to maintain it, to grow it, it always requires like multiple people, right? And whether it be your fellow developers, but or designers or PMs, you need one shared place where you can look at like changes, which are either bugs or updates, and kind of come to consensus on that. And so that's what we really focused on with Chromatic, and why we even have a web app that everyone can go to. It's so that that consensus can be established. And what's more, on Chromatic, we want to make it easy for you to cross reference what things also look like before, right? Because a diff only tells one story. It tells a story of what this used to look like, the baseline, and what this looks like now. Right. And that's only on like, say, a branch. Right.
Sure.
But what you're also thinking about when you look at one of these diffs is like, well, OK, so how does this actually work? If you find a change, right, if you find a diff, you want to QA it. So look at the interactive, play with the interactive pixels, ensure that it's the right thing, but you also want to cross-reference what that component, the button component, might have looked like on master, or what it looks like on the design system branch, or what it looks like on whatever other branches like you might have that component on, so that you can accept or deny with confidence a new test or a new baseline.
I love that. Now you mentioned accept or deny in that, and one of the things that I love about this is that you have, so just in really practical terms, you integrate this, you have GitHub, you make a branch or whatever that runs your test, you know, however it's integrated, CircleCI or otherwise, and then it halts.
Yeah.
You know, if you have any changes, which you can then go into, you know, Chromatic and then look at the diffs, kind of like, you know, compare it to like, you know, wherever you need to compare it to, like actually play with the pixels, as you mentioned. And then from there, you can actually like accept, deny, and then have that go back to the pull request.
Yeah, and that's something that we thought about, or I certainly thought about a lot when I started designing it. One, of course, like the GitHub integration, and then like the CI integration, and the kind of notification system there, right? Telling people what the status of a visual test build was. The other thing was like this idea of like accepting and denying. In most cases, in say like unit testing or snapshot testing, you really only have one option, right? It's failed and unless otherwise accepted, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And that wasn't nuanced enough because for visual testing, in my opinion, because with visual testing, yes, you can of course accept accept changes as like improvements and update the baseline. But we want you to be able to deny those changes too, and have those denials be reflected in the build status that then gets reported to GitHub. Because what those denials are they're like a to-do list. And that to-do list allows a developer or whoever is responsible for merging that PR to go back in and say, and just like have a very clear idea of like what they need to do to fix, to go to the next step. So that's kind of like the history of that.
Yeah, it's very, very similar to like per line comments in GitHub.
Yeah.
I remember really liking when they added those, because it was that like it's a to-do list where like, oh, okay, I know exactly what I need to do to get this approved, as opposed to just a like, I don't like it.
Yeah. And the other way, like, incentivizes you to just accept all, right? And
yeah,
that's not what we want. And I don't think it's a great process, because when your only options are like accept all or just like live with this failure, that puts you as a developer and me in like a really tough position, that at least in UI, because then you end up shipping something that doesn't look right.
Yeah. Well, one thing I love about this integration, and I think probably like my favorite thing about the service, is that I have always felt just deeply that design is kind of, I don't know, in a lot of teams, I mean, sometimes some places it's like the thing, but like design on a lot of like engineering teams is like very like undervalued as part of the process. And something I love about this is that it kind of, back to the snapshot testing, like it allows you to have those conversations at the right level, right? Like those conversations shouldn't be happening in code. Like that's where the engineering conversation should be happening.
Yeah.
But kind of providing this additional space for people to have those conversations about design, but like as it relates to the implementation, is just so critical. And I think more than anything, I'm so happy to see tools like this start to emerge that are solving that problem of like, now that designers and developers are working so closely together because of components, how do you clearly divide what conversations happen where?
Sure. That's a really great point. I never connected it to kind of like the snapshot testing kind of analogy, but where I see like the design and developer kind of collaboration going with regards to testing, is that like when you have like this built into CI and built have a workflow where you effectively give your like effectively like UI test as a part of the development process, and then open up that testing kind of job, testing step to other disciplines, is that you end up like getting, I guess, closing a certain feedback loop.
Mm.
Because like, let me describe what it was like before, right? As a designer, and you pretend you're a developer, and I mean, sorry, you're a developer.
No, I pretend every day that I'm a developer. I can play this role. I got it. I was born for this.
Yes. Here's what this was like before, right? Designer gave you a mock-up, probably a sketch file, maybe like if they're really like kind of advanced, they would give you like some type of like design, like link to a design handoff tool, which would allow you to kind of inspect and do all that stuff, right? You'd get that, you'd implement it, and then you'd say, okay, I'm done, like I like this is ready to go. You merge it gets merge. Pushed to production, right? And then that designer like just waits till or not even push to production, push to staging. That designer waits till staging all the way over here to then give you feedback, right? But at that point in your process, you're like, I'm done.
Yeah.
I've shipped this thing and it's in staging, and like now someone has to come and tell me, my designer has to come and tell me that I'm doing this wrong, right? That doesn't feel good.
No.
And that's also not the right steps. So if you get this, if the designer can come in during the testing step, right, while you're already doing development, then it doesn't feel like the designer is like cramping your style or preventing you from pushing that merge button.
Yeah,
it feels it's a more integrated process, and the designer's coming in at the right time to like affect your your development so that it doesn't feel like you're doing a bunch of throwaway work if you get a bug report and staging about the UI. And then you have to, that then has to go get cycled through like product management and like triage to then go back to you so that you can fix it. And then you might fix another, then you might break something else while you're fixing it, right? Like that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that is such a critical point. So much time is lost. Like we talk about asynchronous workflows,
yeah.
But like so much time is lost when you have this, like, you know, we threw the development over the wall and like, you know, it's done. We wash our hands of it until you throw the design back over and then, you know, all that. And it does increase the like intensity or irritation, right?
Because
you're like, oh man, I thought we were done, and like,
yeah,
you know, now it's a week later and you finished your thing and now I have to kind of like pick it up where it left off,
right?
And this is all just going to happen again. And I do love that it's kind of like at the pull request phase now you have both of those things kind of like meeting together.
And it's such a pain too, right? Like it's such a pain for everyone. It's a pain because like you're like from a relationship standpoint, because someone has to then someone has to have that awkward conversation of like, dude, you messed up here. Like this doesn't look right.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to go through product management. It doesn't have to go through engineering management to kind of get that fix, you know, back into the pipeline. And yeah, it ends up just smoothing out the process and kind of streamlining it all. And also it tells you, like the machine tells you that you're wrong, not someone, not a human.
Yeah.
There's a certain nuance there that it's nicer when your tools just say, this is not right. Like ESLint, right?
Yep.
Versus when you get that like feedback in code review, by a fellow developer, like it doesn't feel nice. And there's something about like the developer experience of like just having the machine do it for you and tell you where you messed up,
yes,
which is more objective.
Yeah, like we decided on these things, you know, together,
yeah,
as like a result of a collaboration, and like I'm not being a jerk to you by like reminding you, like we just decided it, and like you just need to like fall in line. Like
that's why I love Prettier. It just does it for me.
Yeah,
yeah. Maybe one day we'll get.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, I love the idea that we could, and I think that's what I'm so excited about with Chromatic. Now, you had mentioned something earlier. I can't even remember if this was like maybe before we started talking, but you talked about how the component kind of was critical in actually getting to this stage, and I think it was relating to Storybook and documenting stories and whatnot. But that was critical for unlocking this type of potential.
Yeah,
could you talk to that a little bit more?
So I think React was launched in 2014, and then we've seen tools in development and design all align towards this component construct. And the reason why I think the component construct is so powerful is it kind of gives you three different concrete benefits. One is like precision, right? So you can pinpoint what's going wrong at any part of your in any part of your app down to the component, right? Versus like say a line of code, the line of code doesn't help necessarily. The component is just more precise with components. Testing components, it also gives you more coverage, right? And what that specifically means is like you get by testing components, you effectively test all the places that those components are kind of like used, right? It's almost like transitive testing or testing by the transitive property. And then you get component testing also, you get kind of like fewer, false positives. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to rewind and go back in time like 100 years and to say like this stuff isn't new, like why component testing is valuable, and I'll get back to visual regression testing in a second, but like why is component testing valuable, right? 100 years ago, what was going on? It was like the mass production like in like era for goods and services, right? And at that time, it was when like Ford Motor Car, who build like Fiestas and F-150s, started. And they were really like the first large scale kind of organization that was pumping out millions and millions and millions of like these Model Ts, right? And how could they even do that? They did that by focusing on like standardization of all of these parts, and specifically working like testing the tolerances and the quality of every single component that was put into a Model T, right? And in doing so, they could have high confidence that the end result, the Model T that you drive off out of the factory, would work. And they had so much confidence in like their manufacturing processes, so the testing of the components, the engineering of the components, the kind of like makeup of components, that oftentimes they didn't even test the engine until they drove it, until it was all put into place and they drove it off the lot, right? That's kind of what's going on. What we're, as like React developers, are kind of going through as well. Like, we're entering this component age, and we can test these components at a really fine and granular level. And through that testing, we're able to then like ensure the quality of the end application, right? And we're doing that through unit testing. We're doing that through and through visual testing, right? And so, what's important about visual testing and why components matter now? With visual testing, it really comes down to like what, like how the apps are built and what we're actually building, right?
Yeah.
And sorry, this is like a long way of kind of describing this and describing like the.
I like the long way.
With visual testing before, you were testing a bunch of pages, right?
Yeah.
And that was testing, and for a website or a blog or like a smallish content site, that was perfect, right? But what we're building now is, as React developers, we're not building these kind of like small sites anymore. We're building web apps. We're building multi-state, hyper kind of like personalized web apps. If you're Facebook, you have 1 billion profile pages. 1 billion profile pages. You're not going to test 1 billion, like instrument visual testing for 1 billion profile pages. You're going to lose your mind if you do that. a better way of testing is to just take a page out of Ford's book, visual test every single component that you get that constitutes the end user experience, and in doing so, you will have a high like confidence that the end user experience is going to be right. And so that's what we're doing with visual testing too. If we can test the kind of the qualities and the aesthetics of a button, the appearance of a button, we can, in a bunch of different states, we can ensure all of the places that the button is used and all of those states is going to be right.
That's interesting. Now,
does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh, totally. And I think this whole time that we've been talking, that you were describing this, I was kind of feeling this like natural, like objection, I guess. And just because of the way that the conversation in React testing has gone, right? Like, it's like, we want to test not so much at like the unit level, but like moving higher up to a level. And that was kind of like a natural like thing. But as you were describing it, I was realizing like, it's not so much like not wanting to test at any level, but you want to test at a level that people are consuming your thing.
Exactly.
And we're testing small things like, you know, buttons or alerts or like, you know, images and whatnot. But the reason we're testing at that level is because that is the level that people are developing on.
Yeah.
Right. And we need to make sure that those APIs are correct and like tested, so that when people go to construct those views, those APIs are actually reliable and they do the things that they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
It's like, it's funny because it's like, it's so sticky, right? But like, even though it's like these things are so like these elements are so atomic, they're actually like quite complex. We're not testing the implementation. That's what like, you know, was it like snapshot testing or whatnot would have been doing.
Or like unit testing or end-to-end testing. And
yeah,
the really like the nuance here is that you have to get the right testing strategy for what you want to test.
Yeah.
Right. We're testing UIs, like specifically the visual appearance of UIs. And so what's the best way to test that? Versus like what if you're testing user flows, like end-to-end testing might be the right thing for you. If you're testing unit, like kind of like the functional aspects of your application, unit testing might be the right thing for you. But since we're testing UIs and we're building these multi-state apps that aren't just like a collection of a small collection of pages anymore, we need to kind of like come up with a testing strategy that makes sense for what we're actually building.
Yeah. Now, have you noticed, you'd mentioned earlier that these, because these types of tests are composable, it's not just limited to, you know, like buttons or whatnot.
Yeah.
You can do these full interactive views. Have you found in the tests that people are using Chromatic for that this has helped them actually develop better APIs for their components? In having effectively to separate that boundary between the visual and the actual like interaction with data?
So by separating the presentation layer from the kind of data management layer, you're able to understand what combination of props and what shape of information that you mock is going to yield a certain state. That helps you reason about like really complex like screens,
sure,
in a much more natural way, versus say for instance like if all that was intertwined, like that would be impossible to kind of understand. Okay, well this button and this checkbox over here messes with that thing over there, messes with that thing yeah. over there. If you've ever built faceted search without Storybook and then built faceted search with Storybook, it's like a night and day difference in terms of like ease, maintainability, and so on. Yeah, so the Chromatic is just Chromatic having like automated testing with visual testing with Chromatic is just like the cherry on top of like what is possible with like the store when you adopt a Storybook workflow.
Awesome. Well, I think we're at like about an hour yeah. now, and I know that you got important things to do and I have things to do. But I am really grateful for your chat. I appreciate you kind of clarifying some of the kind of mental models required to embrace this type of testing. Is there anything that you want that we didn't get to mention that you'd like to just kind of tell people to go to like a blog post on that thing or whatever?
The exciting thing that's coming out right about now, and hopefully by the time this blog or this podcast gets published, we'll have it live, is we're launching Chromatic 2, 2.0. And what Chromatic 2.0 is it extends the visual testing workflow and improves it, but also adds a couple new workflows that might be interesting to like Storybook users and to React developers in general. The first workflow is a visual review. Visual review is this process of, I liken it to kind of code review, but for UI. And so it compares the UI between branches. So UI UI components between branches, and then offers that up to allow like developers and designers and PMs to review a UI before it's merged into like the trunk branch. And the problem that kind of solves, or that does solve, and we've been using it, is oftentimes once you finish development, right, you have to get feedback somehow. It used to get feedback through putting it on staging. Now you can get feedback by kind of publishing your storybook online. And so with Chromatic 2.0, you can publish your storybook to Chromatic 2.0. We will automatically tell you what components have changed, so you don't have to do that kind of manual step of like finding what has changed as the developer, like taking a screenshot of it, pasting it into Slack or pasting it into GitHub or like taking an animated GIF of like an interaction and pasting that into GitHub, and then getting your designer and all your stakeholders to like look at this kind of low fidelity artifact. Now you can just do it in Chromatic, share the link with them in Chromatic. They can play with the actual interactive component right there, give you feedback right there. And that surfaces like another PR check about the feedback, the implementation feedback. And so we hope that that's going to, you know, streamline that UI development process even further and remove a bunch of steps that like no one really wants to do.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I mean, I'm like thinking about that right now, and it feels like that kind of incorporates a little bit more of the stakeholders.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so we've talked about incorporating the, you know, design and development, but like this really kind of gives you a chance to surface some of those conversations to like managers, like POs, PMs, like all that kind of stuff, to at that higher level to have those conversations.
What we found in researching the Storybook community and kind of like them telling us what they're going through is that everyone kind of goes through some ascent, like this process of like communicating what the thing looks like or how the thing is supposed to work in a bunch of different mediums, right? So Slack or GitHub or Asana or Jira, and all of these are kind of like low fidelity mediums for giving feedback and kind of reviewing stuff. And not only that, like every discipline has its own medium, right? So product managers using something else. Engineers are using GitHub or a code tool. Designers might be using Slack or I don't even know. QA people are using like, you know.
It changes every
week. Exactly, exactly. And you as a developer, and me, we're just kind of stuck in this kind of quagmire of like, okay, what feedback was left where and when and like, okay. And then I made a new tweak, a new version, and like that needs to be reviewed again. And then more people are going to give me feedback. So it's all coming from different directions and it's super tough to manage. At least for me, I don't know about you. It's super tough to manage like all of this like, disparate feedback.
I think we forget how hard it is to manage, right? Like once you kind of like associate with a process, it's like, oh, that's just the way it is. Yeah. We forget like what a pain in the ass.
Exactly. And God, I was coming to this realization a couple of days ago that like sometimes that you get stuck in the process. You spend more time in the process than in the actual code itself.
Yeah.
Right. And like, I don't like being in the process. I don't like being stuck in the process, you know, of like, okay, getting all this feedback and trying to put it all together and managing that stuff myself. So anyways, the point is like Chromatic 2.0 is becoming a place where all that feedback lives in one place. And because it's connected to CI and because it's connected to your storybook, it's always up to date and you can see the live interactive components all online without having to, pull like the, you know, like Git checkout something, deal with node modules or like manage or go from Slack to Asana to like GitHub and kind of consolidate the feedback and then iterate on it and then do it all over again. It all just lives in the same place now.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what we're launching with Chromatic 2. We're also launching a free plan. So you get a lot of this stuff for free. And our goal is to like provide this like kind of UI infrastructure for developers to kind of make everyone's job easier. I guess that's the whole, well, that's why we exist, right? Like we want to make UI development easier because we are UI developers. And so if you go to chromatic.com, that's my plug, chromatic.com, and by the time this thing gets released, or by the time this podcast gets published, you can kind of sign up and start using it for free.
Awesome.
Forever. Free forever, on a certain plan.
Awesome. I'm really excited, and I hope that a lot of people will give that a try, because I know it's been just revelatory for the work that we're doing on building, especially, you know, as the concept of building design systems is becoming more and more integrated into every product's workflow.
Yeah.
I just think that this is invaluable tooling, and I think that I hope that it continues to spark more integrated tooling from the design development and like product side. 'Cause man, we need it.
Yeah, I do too. And I'm looking forward to kind of getting everyone's feedback and getting your feedback, your honest feedback when the time comes.
Awesome. Well, Dominic, thank you. How can people follow you and Chromatic for updates?
So I'm on Twitter at Dom Yen, DOMYEN. And you can follow Chromatic on also on Twitter at Chroma, Chroma, UI. And that's where we live. And also check out chromatic.com for the actual product.
Killer. Well, hey, thanks so much for your time and talking with us about like what your vision is for this product. I know it's something that I'm super aligned with, and I hope that we can get more people on board with it, because, you know, it's just such a delight.
Yeah. Thanks a lot. I appreciate that.
So we're a little bit ahead of Chromatic's announcement of this free plan, but it will be coming next week. If you want to start a trial today, they have a 30-day free trial, and you can just switch your account when that new plan becomes available. But no matter what you do, you should give it a try. I love it. This has been episode 91 of React Podcast with Chantastic and Dominic Nguyen.
find the people and projects mentioned in this episode at reactpodcast.com/91. Thanks to our sponsor, Infinite Red. If you're stuck in a React or React Native project, tap Infinite Red for help. They'll teach you your way out of whatever problem you face. Visit reactpodcast.infinite.red to start a new project today and get 2 tickets to Chain React Conf in 2021.
If you like this show, there's a fast, free way to demonstrate your support. Leave us a review on iTunes. It's the best way for you to let me know what you think we're doing right and what we can improve. 2 to 3 minutes of your time helps us make the best show we possibly can. As always, links and show notes for all episodes are available at reactpodcast.com. This episode was edited by Mikhail Delport. It was produced by Mikhail Delport and Sarah Jackson at Spec, a network to help you level up in design and development. Check out spec.fm for other shows that are sure to fast track your career. I'm your friend Chantastic. Thanks for listening. We'll be in your ears again next week.